The Football Pod on Off the Ball. Brought to you by Movember, ahead of the game. Building mentally resilient GAA communities on and off the pitch.
James, it could have gone much like the Meath game, and it's been referenced. I asked Colby McDonald for his favourite moment of the season, and he said the Meath game, because that could have been the end of his year with Mayo and the manner in which they turned it around and the crowd got behind
Jesus,
him.
Yeah.
Much like the Meath game, it could have gone horribly wrong for Mayo. They're 1-5 to a point down. And then Jack Kearney, who Andy has said, the proudest transformation that has happened this year is Jack Kearney's, for him, personally as a manager. We'll get into that again, but 1-5 to a point down. And Jack Kearney demands the ball on the right-hand side of the hill and curls one over with his right. Very similar to the epic two-pointer David Clifford scores when the game is in the melting pot a little later in the second half on the right. At that stage, it's 1-5 to 3. Kerry go on to have five misses in a row. Kerry could have done their power punch there that they'd done to other teams. Like, they could have, because they hit them for Sean O'Shea point, David Clifford goal, Sean O'Shea point. Then it's punctured by Kearney. And Sean O'Shea kicks the next point. I don't know if you remember Kobe McDonald's speculative two-point effort on the run on the right, and there was a groan in the stadium.
Yeah.
And something happens after. I haven't really fully talked about this game yet, so I'm talking for a bit here. But a couple of things happen next. Andy Moran decides to make a switch and takes Paul Towey off after 24 minutes and brings in Tommy Conroy. I had a couple of great chats with Paul Towey. I've had a couple of interviews on the record with loads of Mayo lads, but my conversations with Paul Towey late in Westport and in the tunnel of Croke Park that haven't been recorded are some of my favourite that I've had, because that's the type of teammate I want to be, is Paul Towey. I want to be the kind of guy that doesn't have the ego that when he gets whipped off, he's not annoyed or disappointed, that he's going out there to do a 25-minute job, a 30-minute job, to empty himself for 30 minutes. Paul Towey's a shooter. Paul Towey's the kid who went to Chicago and scored 116 in the old rules in the game. Paul Towey, for his club, is the leader who takes all the shots. Yet for Andy Moran's Mayo team that have won the All-Ireland, he's there to win breaks. He's there to be a link man. He's there to get whipped off on 24 minutes. And Tommy Conroy comes in. And what happens when Tommy Conroy comes in? Jason Foley goes on Tommy Conroy. Ryan O'Donoghue becomes essentially a free man in that Kerry defence, because they don't mark in the half-back line. And Conroy's first thing he does is get fouled in the same corner, the same spot where David Clifford kicked that winning free essentially for Kerry against Galway in 2022. And 19-year-old Dara Byrne, who had missed everything so far up to that point, he had dropped the shot short. He got turned over on the sideline. He missed a high ball dropping in. The 19-year-old curls it over from there. And at that stage, it's 1-6 to 6 points in the 25th minute, 90 seconds after Tommy Conroy coming in. This is the longest question of all time. At what point, at what point, James, in Croke Park? Because I was sitting beside you. At what point in Croke Park did you think, shit?
Not in the first half, if I'm being honest. Although looking back, definitely should have been. I mean, the wind going into that hill was substantial. It held up a couple of Mayo's two-point efforts. It stopped Kerry shooting for two-pointers completely in the second half. And the couple of ones they did shoot were short as well. I agree, that free from Byrne was a beautiful kick. For that age, like, you have to think about the age of that young fella. I don't know, was he even playing, starting for Sigerson teams throughout the year? And he's coming in and he's playing corner forward with little to no training, because I know he's been carrying knocks all year. And to deliver that performance, I think, is fantastic. That switch was really interesting. When Tommy Conroy comes on, they put Jason Foley straight back on him. I wonder if Jack had his time back, would they do something differently there? Because we had McStay on in Louth, who put me back in my box a couple of times. And the main one was about Ryan O'Donoghue. Do you know, we were saying Louth had to nail down this fella, that fella. And he said, no. They should be concentrating on Ryan O'Donoghue, and everything else will kind of look after herself once you stop Ryan O'Donoghue. And I don't think that Kerry had that mindset. Like, if they left, they took Jason off him, left Ryan O'Donoghue, you know, do what he wanted, and it didn't really pay off, to be honest. Now, it is hard to mark everyone. We've said it loads of times. You can't mark everyone. It's impossible. It leaves too much space. But geez, Ryan O'Donoghue. Ryan O'Donoghue is an absolute winner and a warrior. And he stood up and delivered at that stage. And just the last thing I'll say on Towie, I can't imagine playing that role. I can't imagine the dejection, the disappointment, the, you know, if you're a weaker man would feel embarrassed maybe, you know, about being taken off in that situation. And the fact that he doesn't feel any of those things, just wants to deliver those 25 minutes for his team, says a lot about him. And in that press conference, Andy was asked about him. And Andy was like, yeah. Like, I asked him to play 25-30. Tommy Conroy can't play 70. That's the job he was given, us job he was offered, that's the job he took. And he did it brilliantly. And that's it. Like, he didn't see it as a donor on Towie to come off. He almost saw it as a feather in his cap that he was able to do that role and that he could contribute. So that's great management again. Do you know, to get a fella to be able to do that for you is just incredible. To get into these fellas' heads, that's like something Mourinho would whip up. Do you know? So the fact that Towie was able to do that and happy to do that is a great sign of him and Andy.
Yeah. And Paddy, it wasn't just Towie. When you hear Andy talking about the boys he soldiered with that he convinced to come back, Rob Henley is a young family. He starts the championship. He loses his place to Jack Livingston, a fella that he had watched growing up and knew he was going to be great. But he loses it mid-season. He mentors him. He coaches him. The training that Aidan O'Shea has done for the last month, by all accounts, he has done absolutely everything he can to get back on that pitch for Mayo. He's done everything he can to get those lads right. He's minded Kobe. He set the tackle count for Ryan O'Donoghue, who asked him, how many tackles are you going to make today? Killian O'Connor, I don't know if you heard the story, lads, of all the stuff we did at the weekend, but Killian O'Connor came back this year to contribute for Mayo on the pitch. He gets minutes in championship, but he gets injured in a challenge game in May. So he's not able to play on Sunday. He's not even able to watch the game. When Dermot O'Connor, who had put in a brilliant performance, doing so much dog work in that game, gets taken off for, I think, it could have been Loftus, or it could have been Loftus with 13 minutes to go. It was Conor Loftus. Dermot O'Connor can't watch the end of the game. He walks into the dressing room under the Hogan stand, into the Mayo dressing room, and there's one other man in the dressing room. It's his brother, Killian O'Connor, who cannot stomach watching the game out in the stadium. And the two boys who tried so many times as the central cogs of that Mayo team stayed in the dressing room until Tommy Conroy put that ball over the bar. They couldn't stomach it. And they sprinted out together just in time. And you can see Dermot O'Connor on the TV coming out just in time to make it. Like, what that group emptied into that Mayo team. And as James said, the management, the Mourinho-esque management from Andy, he talks about bringing Conor Loftus in. And when he sent Matthew Ruan and Rory Brickenden in, Rory Brickenden was wearing the wrong jersey. He had to get it changed. And seemingly Matthew Ruan, I think, went into the wrong area, the wrong matchup. So he sends in Conor Loftus, who he sees as a captain himself. And Loftus makes the changes. He sends in Paddy Durkin with 8 minutes to go, with three instructions to go around the field. His on-field captain is the former captain of his Mayo team. Stephen Cohen, I don't know, is this even coming out? Stephen Cohen turned around to the Mayo management team on Thursday and said, I'm out. I can't. I'm not going to be able to give you what I want to give you. He removed himself from the squad on the Thursday before the All-Ireland final.
Because of injury, is it?
He knew his knee. He could have wrapped himself up, or he could have taken a place on the bench to come on with 5 minutes to go. And he said on the Thursday, I'm gone. I'm out. And they made a switch then on the Thursday. Like, what Mayo have done, it is not for themselves. It is for their entire county. And it's just some story.
Yeah, and look, it does. As Jimmy said, it comes down to success or failure does ultimately land on the manager, rightly or wrongly. The players go out and perform and do all this stuff, but the whole atmosphere, the whole environment is controlled by the man at the top. And Andy has to take massive credit. As you said at the start of the show, he's a guy who went in and believed they could win the All-Ireland when no one else did. And I would say a lot of those players were sitting there thinking, what? Like, this is... They were so far away from that. Even through... It's April when the Rossies hammered him. You know? And it's... For him to create that environment, where a young fella like Tu, he is like, yeah, I'll do 20 minutes, no problem.
Tell me to jump,
how high, I'll ask you. The likes of Aidan O'Shea, legendary players, some of the biggest profiles in the history of Mayo football, are there going, I'll do anything to help this team. It's not going to get limelight. It's not going to get game time. Every player wants to play. And Killian going back, their top scorer in their history, one of their greatest ever players. You know, there has to be a special environment there for that to all work, because it's easy. We've all played. And bear in mind, these are all the best players in their clubs and underage stars, and they come up and it's like, well, no, you're not playing today, or you're going to be number 26 in the squad, or you're not going to be in the squad at all. And yet they still have total buy-in. That is the manager creating that environment. And that is the most incredible thing. And maybe, I don't know, but maybe has that held back Mayo in previous iterations where they've had brilliant players and they couldn't quite get over the line. The margins are so small, but the one thing that you saw in abundance throughout the season, but through the semi-final against Louth, and again on the biggest day, the greatest day in their history, was a total and utter alignment from their supporters, the players, the starting 15, the squad members, the coaches. And we've seen it in the reaction after, looking at players like we've seen Lee Keegan on the telly, or Tom Parsons, or Higgins and Boyle in the backroom team. All these players who missed out on this feeling. Some of the greatest players Mayo have ever had. Yet their reaction to this and response was total joy. Not one inch or one sentiment of, Jesus, I wish that fucking happened when we were playing. And seeing, like I say, Killian O'Connor, the reactions. That's why I was nearly getting emotional looking down on the pitch at the final whistle, because they'd finally done it and it was so collective. The whole thing was collective, and it's a new generation of stars, but those guys played a role in inspiring those players on the pitch. You know, Coyne is talking with Higgins as his hero. I totally believe that. But just that total alignment that comes from the coach setting that tone, but that's the expected atmosphere, the expected culture. And I tell you, that's definitely not the case in every county in Ireland, where there's players coming off and they're pissed off, or their players aren't getting game time and they're pissed off. Once that starts happening, it can go sideways pretty quickly. So it's that was another part. It was just a really cool thing to see, that total selflessness, total sacrifice, and you win the biggest prize. So it's, that's why neutrals were so behind it, you know.
Do you know, just from the losing side, Shane Murphy, I feel sorry for him in a way, because he was robbed of an all-timer of a save contribution. Like, obviously, the save was still a save from Kobe's one, where he dummies on the right, comes back on the left, and Shane saves it with his kind of his temple or his eye. But if Kerry had won, that would have gone down as one of the great saves. It was like Dudek in the Champions League final. And also, I thought, in fairness to Kerry, the way that Paddy and David Clifford stood up and tried to drag them back into it against the I thought was powerful as well. Now, when you lose, and you don't want to say, well, at least this fella played well or whatever, that's nonsense, I know that. But I did think the leadership by those fellas was part of the story of the day. It was great to see as well.
Definitely.
But can I ask you, Tommy, before we wrap it up, whatever, later on, but tell us, you obviously went to Castlebar, you went to Mayo. Yeah,
give us the lowdown.
Give us an old rundown. What was this story up there?
Yeah, sorry. I know I'm probably talking a lot here when I'm chatting to you, but I've wanted to talk to you all week about this stuff, because I'm not sure I'll ever experience anything like it again. I left the team hotel on Monday morning. I went back to the office over the road. It was in Dublin 8, went over to the Dublin 2 in Marconi House, filed a couple of interviews with young Kobe and Jordan Flynn and Matthew Ruan. I did an interview with an English radio station who wanted to talk about it the weekend. I hopped into the car And I was like, grand, I'll make it to Castlebar. It'll be fine. We were broadcasting on News Talk from 4 o'clock to 10 o'clock live from the homecoming celebrations. Like the hard shoulder on News Talk just decided on Sunday evening. We had this plan in place on Off the Ball just in case it happened. So we were all organized and ready to rock. I hit the road at 12. You know, you're on phone calls going down the road. But then I just stopped taking phone calls. I just took in all the random people on the side of the road in Mayo colours. Like, why were they there? The bunting, the scarecrows with the Mayo tops, the flags. The traffic started in Multifarnham in Westmeath. This is on Monday. The traffic started, and it wasn't just Mayo people going there. It doesn't make sense that there was Mayo people going there. There were so many people in Castlebar. It didn't make sense, right? And most of those people, or anyone around Castlebar, stayed in Castlebar that night. The team went to Westport, and Knockranny House really looked after us, the off-the-ball crew. They actually had the team there for a meal. We stayed there that night ourselves, and the team stayed somewhere else in Westport. As Westport was absolutely insane. I had said Castlebar was lawless on Monday. Like, there were so many cops. There was, like, public order police deployed to Castlebar. Now, there was no trouble. They were just there. Like, I bumped into a guard. I'm not even going to say his
name. Working or celebrating?
In case he's not allowed. A guard crying. A guard crying, watching the homecoming. Like, I have never seen something like it. We did a really cool broadcast. I had a radio mic down on the ground as the players were coming off. I grabbed Andy for a couple of seconds. Owen was up in the TV tower. So the first 30 minutes of the show are there. Then Owen says, we've actually got David Brady up here. And we experienced David, one-sided David.
How is David? How is David this week?
Well,
has he checked in with anyone?
You should listen.
When I saw him on up for the match, I couldn't believe it. How did he make it up for the match? He's a gas man.
You should take the Thursday night appearance of David Brady on a roadshow, and he was brilliant. You should take the up for the match appearance, where I'm sure he had a point or two, and you should listen to his chat with Owen on Monday night, where he's in ribbons, like, he's in tears. it's one of the most unbelievable pieces of radio, right? But Westport, lads, I'm sure you saw the videos and the scenes.
Yeah, it's class.
At 1 o'clock in the morning, there was a couple of hundred people on the main street outside Mapaloy's. And the players, there's five or six players, and they're all up on shoulders, like, and it's nuts. It's absolutely mental. And I was lucky I managed to, you know, I dropped Andy a text and said, you still going? He said, where are you? Come in here now. And I said, I'll not get in here, Andy. There's about 100 people waiting to get in. Give me 5 minutes. I'll send Boiler out to you. I'm standing the other side of the road, and all I hear is this croaky voice screaming, Tommy! Tommy! And Conan Boyle brought me into the happiest place I've ever been in my life. And I stayed in there for about an hour between Andy and Jenny and chatting to some of the team and the players. And it was incredible to witness, because you could see the euphoria of everyone outside. But this was the family and friends inside. And it was special. It really was special. And then, yeah, I don't know. I think the way they've handled themselves, like, I spoke to Andy on the phone yesterday. He has no voice. Like, he does not have a voice. And he has taken in everything. And I think a lot of the players have taken in. Like, you've been on homecomings, and I'm not sure how many of them you can remember. But as much as the players are celebrating, you get the sense that they are taking in every moment. They're going to every town. They still have another 3 homecomings today. Like, when are they going to get a moment on their own as a group to take it in? Like, when are they going to get a chance to? But I don't think they want to, because they know it's not just for them. It's for everyone.
They'll get a tea. It's usually like the Sunday and Monday are mental between, like, for a normal All-Ireland wins, the banquet and then the homecoming the following day in your main town or whatever. And the Tuesday or Wednesday is when you get a bit of downtime with the players and you can have a bit of crack and actually take a breath and go, Jesus, that's amazing. Whereas with this thing, because it's so big for Mayo, you're right, they're in Balladurine tonight or Ballyhonest the other night, and you're seeing the videos. It's like every town. That Sam, the Sam Maguire will be in every primary school in Mayo. It'll be in every secondary school. It'll be in every GAA club. And because the victory is for Mayo, the whole county. And it's, I'm, what am I, 38 now. and we're going to Croke Park for 30 plus years. I've never seen or experienced an All-Ireland win or any win in Croke Park like that. I've played in these things and I haven't seen outpouring like that. You know, Armagh winning in 02, their first one, or Tyrone in 03, their first one, or who was it? Mickle with Leash, or Paddy O'Shea with Westmead. They're brilliant wins, and it's just means so much to people. But this win seems to just transcend the GAA. There's people around the country who have no interest in GAA, never looked at it, never cared about it, and gone, they know Mayo won the All-Ireland. Because the story around it of 75 years, particularly the last 20, 25 years, losing all those finals, finding new ways to lose, it's Hollywood stuff. That they finally get over the line the way they did. And that's why every one of those defeats has kind of led to just a build-up and build-up and build-up and build-up. That when eventually it happened, and we didn't think it was going to be on Sunday. We did win one eventually, but didn't think it was Sunday. But when it happened, it was going to just be euphoria. And it's one of the rare things from talking to a few Mayo people, and I've a text message off someone there from Mayo, and it is, they've no voice. It goes, I'd voice note you, but I just have to do with this. The rare occasions where all the anticipation, you know, you wait so long for something, does it actually live up to the hype? And you get the sense that Mayo's win is actually living up to everything they thought it would be. And that's why I was walking out of Croke Park. We left the tunnel, Jimmy, and it was whatever time it was on Sunday. And I was just walking down Clonliffe Road, going back up to the Truncana train station. And I was just smiling at these Mayo people because they were like... They were like, I hadn't seen it, including all Dublin's wins, which was amazing for us and always means a lot. But I was looking at, there was a scene just at the corner of Clonliffe Road going on to Drumcondra, the main road, Drumcondra train station. And obviously the Mayo fans couldn't all sit together, this family. So there was like these people walking up and then the other people, other family members were coming back around the corner. And it was the first time they'd seen each other since the final whistle. And they just ran into each other, like, it's 8 or 9 of them from like kids, 10, 11 years of age, the grandparents, and they just started bawling and crying. And I was like, fucking hell, I'm going to start bawling and crying here looking at this. Because it was just, go back to what Andy Moran said after the semi-final when he was asked that question about, and we all agreed with him. He answered it perfectly. He was like, supporters and fans, it's about being emotional. It's about getting carried away. It's about manic highs and crushing lows and being totally irrational about things. That's why we love sport. That you go into this game, any sport, or for Mayo in particular, going, this could be absolutely horrendous. This could be one of the worst moments we'll ever have, but there's a chance this might be the best day of our lives. That's why we all love it. That's why I feel sorry for people who don't love sport. I feel sorry for people who don't love Gaelic football and hurling, because when you're seeing, that's what we're seeing on Sunday. It was like they finally had their time. That's what loving sport is about.
Yeah. Like, do you know what, Tommy, you made a good point there as well. You've two different levels of emotions. You have the supporters, right? Who've had these, like you said, by emotional highs and lows, and you know. Then you have the players and their families, which is, it's very different. Like, I was involved in the final in 11, 14 we won, last in 15, last in 19. And like when you lose those finals, you don't want to show your face. You know, like it's a very strange place to be. You're not, you know, you're just not happy for a long time after it. And all you want to do is get back. And you're definitely around your family and everything. You're not the same. So your family's in there with you in the trenches without you even realizing it because you're too selfish as a player.
Yeah.
But like, to be in and around the players and the management and their families the last day must have been, the level of contentment must have been insane for those. The amount of times that they haven't been able to, or felt like they haven't been able to show their face, or felt like they let people down, to finally be able to give the Mayo people that lift. Do you know, it must be a great feeling for them. I can only say I'm a little bit jealous, to be honest, like, but that must be a great feeling for all of them, and even the families have stuck with the boys and, you know, been there for everything, felt the lows, and for them to just enjoy it as well must be something special.
Paddy, Colin Boyle, I'm not going to say too much about the few hours in Westport that I was in with them, but there was a scene at one stage and I looked up at Colin Boyle and Keith Higgins sitting on the back of a boot, right? They're not even on a seat. And Colin Boyle did not move from this corner, but it gave him the best vantage point. He was watching all the players. He was watching everyone. He was just dancing and fist bumping. And I got a photo with the two boys with their arms around each other, Keith Higgins and Colin Boyle. And I saw a photo during the week from the 2013 All-Ireland final of Stephen Cluxton consoling Colin Boyle on the pitch after that final. And he is in convulsions of tears. Like he is absolutely in ribbons. And that's only 2013. That's not bringing in 16 or 17 or 12 or anything else. And I was listening to Joe Malloy's podcast from the Winners Hotel. And I've been trying to take in as much of it as I can. And it's funny, there's a couple of things from that. But Joe asked Colm, does it make up for those defeats as a player? And straight away he's like, no, absolutely not. That still is a bit of me. It's a part of me. And it's still, you know, it's still rankles and kills me inside. But this is different. This is for the future. That's the past. This is for the future. And Ryan O'Donoghue said after the game on an interview, and I put it to Matthew Ruan, he said, I was haunted by 2021, by that penalty miss. Mm. And when I asked Matthew Ruan about it, I said, were you haunted? And he said, he remembers 3 or 4 days after the defeat to Tyrone. And it was a weird time in the country. It was COVID 2021. Yeah. It was a strange time. He said he remembers lying in his bed, hungover, in the depths of despair, about 3 or 4 days later. As you said, James, not wanting to show the face. And a sliver of sunlight came through the curtain. And he just remembers staring at that sunlight, not being able to get out of bed for an hour and a half. And it just sounded like one of the most horrible places in the world, that you know that there's a life out there, but you don't want to leave the desolation that you are in, that you've gotten yourself. And I just imagine now this week, when Matthew Ryan comes out of the celebrations, and maybe he's on his own, or he's lying there, and he sees that sliver of sunlight coming, he'd probably stay looking at it for another hour and a half.
He still won't be able to get out of bed for 2 hours, though, after 7 days of celebrating.
But the opposite fucking headspace. And I'll be honest, I'm so happy I left Mayo on Tuesday, because I was not emotionally able to do any more of it. Like, I couldn't take emotional joy. I couldn't.
They should embrace it and enjoy it, the players, because they're the ones who've delivered it.
Yeah.
And Colin Boyle and Higgins and Andy and everyone involved in that group, they've created this euphoria for everyone in Mayo people all over the world. And it's there to be celebrated,
yeah,
and enjoy it and embrace it, because they've had the heartache, and that's part of sport as well. You win some, you lose some, but when you win it, I would always be a strong advocate of celebrating the wheels after that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they've achieved everything they've been chasing.
The Football Pod on Off the Ball, brought to you by Movember, ahead of the game, building mentally resilient GAA communities on and off the pitch.